music and talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we are located on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Haukamalum and Squamish-speaking peoples. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm Rebecca, and for once I'm joined by someone in the studio. This is Pranjali.
Hi, everyone.
It's a pleasure to have you. I enjoy not being alone for an hour. If you've been listening to Intravenous for a little while, you might recognize Pranjali because you've featured on some other Data Feminism episodes, but I believe you volunteered before, right?
I did. Like, I was like a co-host for like a long time as well, like helping like actually do interviews as well. And so like actually the co-host.
Yeah.
For a little while, but now since I've moved to my master's, I just can't find time to come and talk here. Even though I'm always like working on the campus, it's just it's just hard to come here. And you know,
that's very fair. I feel like a lot of people just the minute the semester starts, they're like,
go.
Like time suddenly disappeared. Whereas like for me, I'm just always at the studio. I have so much time for the studio. But you're also a member of the board now.
I am.
Which is exciting. At least you're involved in a different way.
Absolutely. And it's so much like fun working with like all the people that I really like admire. Like, you know, obviously we have Mitchell, we have other people on the board who are so amazing. I feel like I'm learning so much about like how the organization works from a different like lens rather than just producing or like programming, but like actually looking from it. From like a board perspective, like looking at finances and stuff like that, it's just so much fun, I think, to be looking at different aspects of community radio and how it works. And so it has been so much fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, at least I haven't like lost touch completely from the radio, which is exciting because I started doing radio when I was very young. So like to be completely detached from radio feels would feel weird to me, and so I'm happy to be like involved in one way or the other. And yeah, Intravenous is like one of the first shows that I did. I mean, Robin is awesome, so
yeah, we miss Robin. I miss because there's so many times where we would have a topic and it would just be me and Robin kind of discussing it,
exactly
type of thing. And now I'm just like, oh god, now I have to find people, and if no one like responds, then it's like just me. I miss having my little chats with Robin in Intravenous. It was a nice way to start off my morning, to be honest.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I also feel like because she's got such a legacy for Intravenous.
I mean, like, she's the one, you know, like,
it's, yeah.
I cannot think about Intravenous, like, you know, as different from her hosting. Like, the way that she hosts, the way that she hosts conversations here, it's just, I've learned so much over time from her, and I think the way that she has shaped the kind of topics, because, like, there is no limit to what we can talk Intravenous, like, the breadth and depth that we have gone on with Intravenous to talk about things from, let's say, like, I don't know, digital literacy to, for example, like drug criminalization here in Vancouver, so like stuff like that, like almost like everything has been talked from a feminist or an intersectional perspective, which is super super important to me as well. And so literally, yeah, Robin is the legacy for Intravenous, and I don't know what's the plan for the show moving forward, but I would love to, you know, support and help to keep such things moving forward.
Yeah because I'm here in Vancouver up until around the end of June, beginning of July. So I know that I'm finishing up with Intravenous at the end of June. I don't know what's happening to it after that, but I do really hope someone can pick it up and keep it going, because I really love it. Because this has kind of been like it was your first show. This was my first show as well. So it's kind of like, it's like a nice little home, little safe zone. Also because I feel like even though I was interested in like gender and intersectionality from my degree and stuff, it's definitely like blown my like doors in my brain wide open, just like how you said, the breadth of the topics that you can go into. I remember one like a distinct one that I thought was just such an interesting topic for us to talk about was it was like a couple of days before Halloween. We were meant to have a guest come on and they cancelled very last minute. We were like, oh, we don't have a topic or anything. And we came up with looking at just Halloween costumes from a feminist perspective.
That sounds really fun, actually.
Yeah. And it was a really funny episode of just like us like talking about like how Halloween costumes are so sexualized, but no one talks about it. Mm-hmm. And you just think, it's freezing cold and we're wearing the most minimal clothing possible. But it's meant to be scary, but we all know we're not looking scary at all.
Also, this made me think about a lot of things. I don't want to go into that topic, but I think like the creation of the witch as a character is interesting versus, you know, like all the villains and like the horror and like the women's figure. Like, how are we like sexualized female is actually scary and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So... yeah,
like, so many ways you could go into it. It was a very fun episode, I have to say.
I would have to look it up because that sounds really interesting. Yeah.
But that is not what we're talking about this morning because we're doing... this is, I feel like, the third part that I've been involved with in terms of data feminism.
Yeah,
because we did one with Robin and then we did one just us two. And now we're doing another one us two.
Can't believe it. It's the third one.
It's the third one, which we're talking about... I think more to do with your research this time, like the areas that you're looking in. I know previous episodes we have touched upon like border control and facial recognition and stuff, but I think this one is a lot more focused in that area. And focusing on, I believe it was the principles 3, 4, and 5.
I think it was 3, 4, and 7, but essentially
3, 4, and 7.
I would say the entire book is just like such a like foundational piece for me, like throughout my work. And I feel like the most important part of that book is that it really tries and like brings together a lot of different perspectives and frameworks together. Because for me, I've read like a lot of like feminist media studies and like feminist science and technology studies work. But I feel like that book does a very good job of like bringing all those like 7, 8 things together and really helps to bridge the gap between those all those principles, because at the end of the day they're all connected, you know.
Yeah.
And for me that makes a lot of sense when I read the book in that order, but I think the overarching sort of aim for that piece of literature is to bring to attention the ways in which power manifests in the way that data is constructed and used, and like the new technologies are being used, they are not neutral. So like, what does it mean when we're using technology for, you know, like creating maps, Google Maps, who created Google Maps, like questions like these, and like questioning the power and the money, and like, you know, following the money is like a phrase, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, following the power and seeing what kind of inequities can be hidden in the ways that the technology becomes, you know, becomes so ubiquitous, like it's everywhere. But we don't necessarily think about it in a critical framework, and I think this book really helps bring all those critical frameworks together, including labor, including power, including like multiplicity and like feminist objectivity and stuff like that together in one place. And that's why I think it is like a starting point for my work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I also like, I feel like we a lot of people take technology for granted now because it's just so integrated into our everyday lives that people obviously will not be thinking about, like, when they get a new phone or something, thinking what went on behind the scenes of this and the creation of it and things like that. The same with, like, all the apps and all of the software. People are just like, oh, yeah, this is so convenient.
Yeah.
And then that's it. It's like, okay, great, can move on with my life. It made my life slightly easier, but not thinking about the power dynamics behind it. And I know one of the principles is rethinking hierarchies and binaries. And I know, like, this is intravenous, so we'll have probably more of a gendered outlook on things, but intersectionality as well. How you're programming things with an almost inherent bias, and you have, we all have a subconscious bias. I know we touched upon, can anyone ever truly be objective and things like that? What's objectivity, which was all in the other episode, and things. And I think that's one, like, since we first spoke, I would say that principle is the one that I always go back to, is like one that's always significant to me in thinking about objectivity and binaries and hierarchies. Because I was doing an episode last night for my show Sociologic talking about female serial killers,
oh wow,
and talking about how there's hidden patriarchal tools used in their representations in the media to enforce a conformity to this stereotypical gendered expectation of women. And that, not that in any way was I encouraging women to be killing anyone, but the media and society takes away the autonomy and agency of a woman to kill because that was her choice. They have a justification for it, and no one clocks this justification that's happening with the media. It's all hidden and things. And you, most of the time when you look at who's behind that, it is typically men. So I think about it in that way as well. And it had me really thinking about that yesterday, knowing that we were going to have this conversation this morning. Absolutely.
I mean, a lot of the film industry and like screenwriting and all of those like places, playwriting is like very male dominated, and it's really hard to find, you know, like female video editors, female copywriters. Like it's really hard to find people who can actually speak from a place of like actually reflecting their positionality and not someone trying to just, you know, explain it from like some like higher perspective, the hierarchy part, like trying to, you know, tell a story of a female suit of color from like a whose perspective, who is telling it, who is the one who is scripting such narratives, and like what does it mean. And then also like which kinds of like media houses, production houses, and like streaming houses are actually playing that kind of things. That is all part of like the film and media studies people. But yeah, it is super interesting to look at and critique what is happening right now in terms of the media landscape.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we properly delve into kind of the area that we're going to focus on today and kind of e-borders and border control and things like that, I'm going to play a song from the playlist that I've been loving this artist from the playlist. I think I've played so many of their songs throughout the past couple of weeks. But this is Avril Jensen with her song Supernova off of the album Is Any of This Real? Which I feel like is a very fitting album title for our topic. So we will catch you guys right when that's done.
Don't need no discussions. I don't wanna talk. Why do you answer questions? What should we talk about? Need to blur my image to fit in the crowd. Teach me how to cry. I wanna feel the supernova. I want my iron to be colder. I want my skin to be tougher. And my eyes to see the future. Don't want no more. Supernova. I want my iron to be colder.
Welcome back to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, where you just heard the song Supernova by Avril Jensen off of her album Is Any of This Real? And I am going to be your host for the next 45 minutes, joined by Pranjali.
Hello.
Where we are going to be talking for the third time about data feminism and delving into different aspects of it. So I know we were just talking about you speaking a bit about your thesis, if you want to delve into that, because obviously data feminism is a big part of you, big part of what you're interested in, your research, your master's.
Well, it's always hard for me to, like, because there's so much that I'm, like, always working on that it's really hard for me to talk about it, because I always have, like, a recency bias, because I've been looking at archives right now.
Yeah.
So my brain is like, yeah, my research is about archives, blah, 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 blah. But no, I think I have, like, an ambitious project, and I don't know if I'll be able to, like, you know, commit to and do justice to all of the things that I've outlined, but one of the things that has been really interesting so far is to be looking at, like, archives of people who arrived here in Canada. So broadly speaking, my research is in how do I put it, like, critical data studies / data feminism, where I try and question the introduction of so there's a thing called Chinook, and there's other different things, softwares and AI tools that are being implemented by IRCC, which is the Government of Canada hub for immigration, refugees and resettlement and stuff like that. And so they have been experimenting with new digital softwares, including experimenting with using AI and automated data analytic tools. And so on a broad basis, my research looks at those different tools to see or to question precisely those things about power, about the hierarchy, the binaries, and all those things. But I think right now, one of my chapters is actually focusing on, because it's really hard to get a handle of a lot of the proprietary technologies that are actually being used. And so I found, like, a bypass way to actually look at their patents and, like, look at different things to see what kind of, like, classification and sorting, like, functions and, like, what kind of math are they doing or what kind of science are they doing, what are they saying about it? Like, because efficiency, like you mentioned, convenience is, like, one of the big things that always come up. But for me, the question is, like, when we talk about efficiency and convenience, like, at what cost, you know, like, what is being left out, and, like, what are the, like, ethical and moral implications of using technologies that people have flagged for so long as being biased, discriminatory? Like, everybody has a sense of that, and still I feel like auditing, for example, like, auditing technologies is, like, a common theme now because people can audit, but I still feel like there is so much that needs to be questioned, and we need to, you know, like, think about it from, like, different perspectives. And so for that, I actually was like, you know what, let me think about, like, how did we come in this position of, like, being so okay with using AI in immigration? Like, what does, how did we come to that moment as people who are making decisions about, you know, immigration, refugees coming into the country and asylum seekers? And for that, I traced, like, the archives, historical archives. I've been looking at, like, Library Archives Canada. I've been looking at, like, City of Burnaby Archives and stuff like that to actually see what kind of, like, technological mechanisms were in place in the past, and, like, what were the kinds of things that were happening, you know, towards the very beginning of, like, Asian immigration in Canada, and the way that it has, like, shaped over time with different policies, with different use of, like, digital technology tools, like, for example, like, using databases of certain kinds that I am aware of, and also, like, even, like, simpler, very simple technologies like photocopying machines or, like, scanning machines, or, like, using ledgers to write and, like, typewriters, like, things like that. So, like, I've been trying to focus a little bit on all those, like, early phases of introduction of technology in immigration or migration management, broadly speaking. And so that's where my, like, thesis is at currently. But I think I'm also going to move towards interviewing people to do, like, a, I guess, like a, because I feel like, for me as a researcher, I feel like it's good to do critical theory work, but I still feel like it's important for people who have actually gone through the process to get some kind of voice to actually, you know, help them and help me and help us think through the process. Because I don't want to be like a researcher who's like, you know, sitting on a pedestal and trying to say, oh, this is what is happening and this is problematic. But I actually want to involve people so that they can also, people who have actually gone through those horrendous processes of getting their visas rejected, getting, you know, flagged just because they come from, you know, a country which is supposed to be flagged by the system. And so that's the overarching goal. But I think I started from, like, literature in, like, borders, so, like, very, so, like, a philosophical and sociological question of, like, why do we need borders, what are borders doing, like, because, you know, it's very different, like, bordering mechanisms have changed over time, like, it was very much physical back then, so there were actually people who were, you know, like, taking your names down, taking your, like, so we didn't have passports, but things like that, like, you know, we had prototypes of passports back then. So they were, like, you know, checking, measuring people for their, like, for example, like, my focus is on South Asian community because that's what I'm the most familiar with. And so, like, you know, measuring their head size and stuff like that to actually, you know, note it down in their system to see what kinds of people were coming in, what kind of jobs they were going in, and, like, really tracking systems, if I were to put in a, like, a modern term, tracking systems, surveillance systems, those were, I think, born out of creation of borders, which are so important to nation building, and, you know, there's, like, a big history and of that, and so I feel like that's why I suggested those two papers, because I think even creation of refugees, the term in different political contexts is different. Same for immigrants or same for asylum seekers, like the category, the creation of these categories of people is not neutral, like it has material implications of people who are going through that process, and that's why I think it's important to talk about it.
No, yeah, I also think it's very interesting that the kind of overarching broader topic of your thesis is very prominent, like both aspects of it are very prominent and prevalent now. Like, we look at immigration now, I don't think it's being talked about as much as it's being talked about now, like, globally. I know back home in the UK, for me, immigration has been a topic that I've been familiar with being in the news a lot since just before Brexit, which I was, like, just under 14 or something. And then now it's like, it's everywhere. You can't go a day without a headline, something to do with immigration back home. And I'm sure that's the case in lots of different places, but that alongside watching that kind of, I'd say issue, it's not like an issue kind of rising in prevalence alongside technology rising as well and changing. It's a very interesting thing to see how they coincide. Especially with like with the paper and what you were talking about with e-borders and things, like having all of that go online, and then it is this idea that you're being tracked. Like constantly your every movement is like noted down, every like experience is somewhere on the web, your data is being collected, but you don't really know by who, what it's doing, what's being done with it and stuff like that. I also find it interesting that you want to get interviews with people that have gone through the process, because I'm a big, when I was doing research methods and things, I'm a big person for qualitative data, because I think it gives a voice to the quantitative, it gives a voice to the numbers. It's very easy to look at quantitative and numbers and not realize that there's people behind those. Those numbers are representing someone, someone's experience and things like that. You only get that from actually speaking to them, qualitative like responses and stuff like that. So I think that's really cool that you're gonna potentially
I mean, it's hard
have
to get
that. But I can imagine it's hard to find the people and things and get
totally
and get the interviews going, and that's always the difficult part.
But no, I think you point out like the most important things. I feel like the coupling of rise of use of like use of technologies in like governance with the aspect of like migrant management and the racial aspects of the technology. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you before, but I'm pretty sure I've mentioned this on Intravenous like 100 times. It's like, so books like Searching for Black Girls by Safia Noble and like other books by like Kate Crawford called The Atlas of AI. These books like really are so interesting because they go into detail about the ways in which these AI tools that are considered to be very efficient are actually not very efficient because they make so many mistakes. And nobody talks about those. And to correct those mistakes, they get more funding to correct those mistakes, which are just not being corrected, because the problem is that you cannot like abstract all of the world into numbers. There's a problem. There's a bigger problem with that. But also, if you try and specify building like AI for hiring or AI for migration management and stuff like that, there will still be some hidden bias because you don't know what those AIs, because like a lot of the unsupervised like training models, they like learn from patterns themselves. That's like the you know, that's like the biggest promise, or people are leaning towards that more. But the problem with that is because we don't know what kinds of patterns is the machine considering as patterns. It might just be because you wrote the word blue 4 times or something. There will be a pattern of people, you know, it will one dimension of it will be like finding the color blue, and so you could just be flagged because you had blue in your application or something like that. Like, I'm just like, you know, giving an example, but things like that. If you have like, I don't know, working like in government or working in community policing or whatever. So if you have the word police, or if you have the word, I don't know, criminal or whatever, like, you know, words that are actually very charged. And if you use those in your applications for like immigration and like asylum seekers who are applying to, you know, seek home here or elsewhere in the world. So like thinking about those specific instances of like, what are the people that the mistakes are made like being made about? Is it, you know, mostly racial people, or is it, you know, because we know those technologies are not neutral. So thinking about, you know, technologies from that perspective is very important, especially in like, I think, and I feel like also a lot of the research and like borders and like migration management has been very sociopolitical. I think it's time that we make it like socio-technical, and that means looking at different technologies, because it's not just about the X number of people who are coming, the legislation, the policies. Yes, they're important, but there are also technologies being implemented that nobody is, you know, focusing on, and I think we need to talk about it more.
Yeah. And I think one of the papers that you sent that was talking about, more talking about bordering mechanisms, and it was the running theme of that paper to be like, there is no ethical framework in which all of this new technology is